I've asked my friend Raphael to come and share about networks and why they matter. We as a network are only as strong as those members that are highly engaged and involved. We don't just exist to serve you, but you exist to serve one another. And together we can do far more than we can on our own. And so understanding what a network is, how it functions, is incredibly important. And Raphael is a wonderful brother and dear friend, and I'd love for you just to hear his heart on networks and how that matters for evangelists. Thank you, brother.
I was in Malawi, and I heard a fellow evangelist doing a presentation called the Pyramid for the Evangelist. And in one single diagram, everything made sense. Especially, how do you reconcile network thinking and organizational thinking? Most of you, actually all of you, you have a website. You have an organization. You're thinking about funding. You're thinking about marketing. You're thinking about how do I run my ministry as an organization. And at the same time, you also belong to a network. And so I want to talk about that. This tension between having to promote your organization and at the same time having to lead on a network in order to go farther and further into your ministry. It's called the Pyramid of the Evangelist. This is what he said. He said, at the top of the pyramid, you have the mass evangelist. Who are the mass evangelists? Well, you have one just behind you over there, who is Luis Palau. You had, you know, Billy Graham, of course. You had Rainer Bonke. And those are really gifted speakers, public proclamation evangelists. And there's only a few of them. But often, when we talk about the ministry of the evangelist, people, we refer to those people. Okay. When I walk into a church and ask the pastor, well, show me where are the evangelists in your church? He's like, oh, no, Billy Graham is dead. I said, I know, I was in the funeral. But Luis Palau also, he passed away. We don't have those kind of evangelists anymore. It's true, and we had a conversation with Kevin and Andrew, but also Daniel Colunda. We saw those great evangelists going home to be with the Lord, and now we are with a new generation, and those are big shoes. Franklin is about to give the baton to William Graham, and how will we continue the legacy of those proclamation evangelists? It's a big question. When I was at Billy Graham's funeral, I was approached by a journalist from the New York Times, and she wanted to have a conversation. She thought it was very interesting that a French was an evangelical. And so the first question is, do you believe that Donald Trump is appointed by God to be the Messiah? I said, let's talk about Billy. This is Billy's day, not Donald Trump, although he was there at the funeral. And we talked about Billy a little bit. I flipped the question and asked her, as a journalist for the New York Times, what do you have to say about Billy Graham? And she said, he was a great man. I said, there's nothing that we can reproach him. Nothing. We've investigated his life. We turned everything upside down. There's nothing. He was a great man. And I do hope that when we pass away, you know, people can say that about us. Yeah. You know, so it's a big legacy. It's a big legacy. The second tier in the pyramid are the credential evangelists. Those are evangelists that have an organization like you, that went through a training and were credentialed, for instance, in the Anglican Church as evangelist, in the Presbyterian Church as evangelist, in the Methodist Church as evangelist. Actually, now in the Lutheran Church in France, they have just started credential for evangelist. That's interesting how historical traditions are coming back into credentialing evangelists. But there are also evangelists leading evangelism organizations. My friend from Campus Crusade are not calling out themselves evangelists. I don't know why. Maybe because Bill Bright was shy about applying that kind of vocation on his life. But Bill Bright was a fantastic evangelist. But for some reason within Crew, they don't like to call themselves evangelists, because they think that if they call themselves evangelists, as they train people in evangelism, people say, well, I'm not an evangelist, therefore I don't need to evangelize. You see the problem? So we don't say we're evangelists. This way, you know, people will still do evangelism. I'm not too sure about this one. But still, I would put them into that category of credential evangelists, because although they would be shy of using the name for themselves, they do the work of an evangelist, that's for sure. The third tier, local evangelists. Those are evangelists in the local church. And if you tell them that they're evangelists, they'll say, no, I'm not Billy Graham again. Because again, they would refer to those at the top as the epitome of an evangelist. So they'll say, no, I'm not an evangelist. But the reality is that they do the work of an evangelist. They lead people to Christ. They're often very frustrated with the pastor because they don't understand why not everybody is excited about, you know, evangelism as they are. And again, often when I go into a church and I ask the pastor, you know, who are the evangelists, and he talks to me about Billy Graham again, I tell him, okay, I'll give you a brief profile of the evangelist. Is the guy or the girl comes to you and always complaining that we're not doing enough about evangelism? Okay, okay. All right, yeah, that's he and she. Okay. Local evangelists. And then the fourth tier in the pyramid is everyone. Everyone giving an answer for the hope that we have within us. Everyone is called to share the good news. And so my colleague said, if you want to increase evangelistic impact, what do you need to do? It's not a rhetorical question. What would you have said? He said, if you want to increase evangelistic impact, what do you need to do? Look at the pyramid and tell me the answer. What is the untapped resource? Yes. He said you need to empower the third tier so that they will empower the fourth tier. Okay. So why do I say that? Because back in 2017, the Lausanne movement held a five-day conversation in Wittenberg for the 500 year of Reformation. And we invited ministries from all over the world, especially ministries that were involved in evangelism and church planting. You know, the fourfold strategy of Lausanne is the gospel for every person, a church for every people, Christ-like leadership for every leader, and then gospel saturation in all pockets in the culture. And so the emphasis was on the first two. How do we increase the gospel for every person and a church for every people? And so Quisetta was there, Kevin was there, I was there, and we were facilitating the conversation on evangelism. And so at the end of the day, after 3 days of brainstorming, how do we accelerate reaching every child, woman, man on earth with the gospel? We used that very pyramid to set up a strategy. And that's what we come up with. We said we need to map existing networks, evangelists, and evangelism influencers. Who is doing what? And that's GNE. And the Global Evangelist Alliance, you had the same idea. It's basically, okay, who are they and how can we bring them together so that as we map existing networks of evangelists and evangelism influencers, we accelerate evangelistic impact. And its empirical studies have proven that once you collaborate, the output is about 200 to 300% more effectiveness. And we see the same kind of collaboration with church planners and even with theological educators. You can take the pyramid and put pastors like Tim Keller at the top, and then, you know, denominational leaders, and then local pastors, and then everyday believers. It works for all the Ephesians 4:11 ministries. But there's a tendency right now, and I really appreciate that, across denominational lines, across faith traditions, including Orthodox and Catholics, about understanding the first two tier and mapping it out, bringing them together to accelerate evangelistic impact. Okay. The second thing we said, we need to train the emerging generation in public presentation of the gospel. And there was a big question mark here. Who is going to do that? Who will train the next Billy Graham and Wispe Lau and Rainer Bonke? It's a special task. Yes, there's the digital world, but still, we still need to do public proclamation. And I appreciate Quisera here leading with Dez and who else is a co-catalyst?
Michael Otz.
The proclamation evangelist track within the Lausanne movement, because across church history, evangelism always happened in three different fashion: one-on-one, groups, and public proclamation on the public square. And so I think that we should not think that because we're moving into a digital era, public proclamation doesn't need to happen anymore. And in order to train the next generation in public presentation of the gospel, it will require the best training material, making sure that we continue to pursue and pray for those vocations to come. We also said that we needed to educate the global church in the rise and awareness on secularism, and train the church on how to respond in a growing secularized society. You know, I was in Abidjan recently. I was talking to friends who were pastors, and they were telling me, "Said, what is these people on Sunday morning? They wear pajamas and they walk their dogs." We've never seen that. And now everybody wear their pajamas and they walk dogs. I say that, yeah, that's what we do in the West on Sunday morning. It's not a pajama, actually. It's called the jogging. And so, but why don't they go to church? Well, that's called secularization right there. Okay. And so we see an acceleration. And let me tell you, that when I came back in 2017 for a gap year doing postdoc research, I was grieved to see the American church not able to navigate that question and choosing sometimes to polarize the church on political agenda, thinking that this was the way to save the gospel. And there's much that needs to be done in that area, much to be done. Research, training, curricula, and write on best practices. That's where we think we can get the most bang for the buck. That's how we say, return on investment. And if we can train local evangelists to continue to do the work of the evangelist, but at the same time having a heart to train people in their congregation on evangelism, I think that's your PhD, right, Reed? That's just, you just spent about 3 years talking about that. Here we go. You know, you're an answer to our prayer. You're right there. Yeah, it's huge, but it's huge. You know, we started a program for now 10 years in France where we do exactly that. We find local evangelists and we bring them into a 3-year incubator. I tell you what, when a local church recognizes the ministry of the evangelist locally, it's 100% growth. 100% growth. We've been doing that now for 10 years across multiple denominational lines. It's a correlation of 1-to-1. You are audacious enough as a pastor to recognize a local evangelist. You will see conversion growth. It's automatic. And so we've been doing that. It's working. Now, who is going to train those people? Those above. So I think part of the challenge within GNE is to transform you into mentors for local evangelists. That's why the advanced group is so key to the strategy. I understand that you have to wrestle with your organization. I understand. I'm running a couple of organizations, and funding is a problem, and then branding is a problem, and digital presence is a problem, and then who is going to run your YouTube channel? I mean, those are legit questions, okay? But remember what Christian Schwartz said in his book NCD. An evangelist should not be concerned about how many followers is behind him. If you want to know if you're a successful evangelist, look at how many vocations you were able to raise in your lifetime. That's the correct benchmark. That's the correct benchmark. So as you struggle to both lead your organization, at the same time we ask you within a network like GNE to pour your life into the life of local evangelists in the city where you are. It's going to require time, but you will reap the benefits, and that's the correct matrix by which you will evaluate your ministry. I truly believe this. There was a guy who was 16 years old and was approached by Billy Graham. Young Canadian, very tall, and his heart was to do evangelism for the students in his high school. And he wrote personally to Billy Graham to ask if Billy Graham would consider speaking at a youth rally that he would do in the area of Toronto. And Billy said, I'll come. And Billy preached that night, and the amphitheater was packed with young students. And when Billy gave the altar call, this young man was praying his heart out, and no one responded. No one responded. And his heart was broken, absolutely broken. And Billy came to him after the night, and he said, young man, I see that you have a heart for Jesus, and God will bless your tears. The name of this young man is Leighton Ford. When Billy came back to Charlotte, he said to his sister, Jeannie, I met a young fellow, I think you'll like him. Billy was so fond of Leighton that he asked Leighton to organize a big campaign in New York City. Leighton was 21 years old. And if you remember Billy's biography, the New York campaign was one of the most effective campaigns in the life of Billy Graham. 21 years. Would you give that to a 21-year-old to go around and mobilize the churches and pastors? The passion of Leighton was to raise a new generation of evangelists. And he trained back in 1986 a whole new generation with the Lausanne Young Leaders Gathering in Singapore. And some of those who are leading worldwide organizations were mentee of Leighton. And they started mentoring groups. And there's a book that you can download for free called The Mentoring Tree on LeightonFordMinistries.org. And it's the legacy of Leighton. Leighton has raised thousands and thousands of evangelists in his lifetime. And yet, he's less known than Billy. But Billy was the first one to invest in his program. And I have the privilege of being mentored by Leighton. So all that to say, do both, lead well your organization, but pour your life in a network. Will you do that? There's here a document on the table, notes that were taken by my friend and colleague, Dr. King, who's doing consulting with a lot of organizations. And it's a document that he wrote for businesses, but it applies very much so to ministries. Page 3 here, you know, you have this table chart, pyramid versus web. A web is built from center out, and we told you what GNE was all about, the core values. This building is a never-ending process, and we provide access. That's why we have those regional meetings across the globe, is to continue to provide access to that growing network. We engage in constant dialogue. We thank you, friends from GEA, to be with us on that as you also build your network. And as you said, Siegfried, we all different nets. Let's be global by bringing those meta network together. I think that's beautiful. We rest on culture and values. That means that we will not promote a brand or an organization. And I must say that I applaud Luis Pella organization for being so quiet by promoting the Global Network for Evangelists. You see what I'm saying? You know, Billy, when he did 83, 86, 2000, reason why he was able to gather 10,000 evangelists in 2000 in Amsterdam is because those evangelists who came knew that the BGA was not there to steal their ministry. You understand what I'm saying? It was a safe place for safe people to have safe conversation. And the problem during Billy's funeral is that we could not answer the question of the journalist who said, who is the next Billy Graham? Because the Archbishop of the Catholic Church in New York City said, I'm Billy Graham. And then Joel Osteen, he was on all the different platforms, ABC, CBS, NBC, and he was Billy Graham. We're all Billy Graham. That, you see the beauty of that? And so Billy was bigger than the BGA. That's why people felt safe with him. And I really applaud you guys at Luis Palau because you're smart. Because evangelists, they can smell if it's becoming transactional. And you're refusing to go that way. And I applaud you for that. Stay away from being transactional. And continue this great legacy that Luis started with the NGA, pouring generously on vocations and vocation, without having any return on investment for yourself. God sees what you do in the secret. Okay. That's why we rest on culture and values. It's completely relationship-based. That's why we take time to spend together. Inspiration, meaning I do hope that we were inspired today. Great story that we've been hearing. And it's flexible. We're open to change. And I salute this intuition that was raised back in Wittenberg 2017 when at the end of the day, when Kevin and Emmanuel and myself, we came together and said, why don't we start this network and see what comes out of it? It was a great intuition. I still believe it is. So thank you for your time. BGNE.